so she led him to one of the access hatches built into the back of the administration building and down the metal ladder into the utilities tunnel.
"Like going down to the Morlocks,"
he muttered as they clambered down the ladder.
"Orlocks?"
Holly asked, puzzled. Kayetta just laughed. As they walked along the tunnel, talking, looking, discovering, Holly realized that here she was, all alone with this guy, and nobody knew where she was. "What'll I do if he starts to come on to me?" she wondered. And another part of her mind asked, "What'll you do if he doesn't come on to you?" "He's a stallion, all right," Holly thought as they prowled along the tunnel. Not much taller than she, but strong, muscular. She had never had the chance to do any sexual experimenting while under her sister's watchful eye, although according to what Pancho had told her, she'd had her share of toy boys, and even serious lovers, when she'd been in school before she died. "Could I make Malcolm jealous?" she wondered. "He hasn't paid any attention to me at all. Maybe if he finds out I'm seeing this stud, he'll take some notice. Maybe..."
"How well do you know Dr. Cardenas?"
Gaeta asked as they paused at a fork in the tunnel. Holly hesitated a moment, picturing the tunnel layout in her mind. "That way," she pointed, "leads out to the farms. This way goes to the factories." He scratched his chin.
"We gonna walk all the way back to the village?"
"Sure. It's only 3-4 clicks.
"There's no transportation?"
Holly laughed.
"Don't tell me you're tired."
"Nah, not really. I was just thinking it's getting close to dinner time and I ought to take a shower, you know, get into some fresh clothes." Holly felt her pulse speed up. "Is he trying to get me to his apartment?"
"I got a dinner date with Dr. Cardenas," he explained, "and I ought to look decent for her."
Holly's face fell. "With Dr. Cardenas?" He must have seen her disappointment. She realized that a blind man could have seen it.
"It's the only time we got to talk about how she can make the nanobugs to decontaminate my suit," he explained. "She's so damn busy setting up her lab, the only chance I get to talk with her is at dinner."
"Oh,
it's strictly business."
"Yeah, I click." Gaeta gave her a sheepish little boy look.
"You want to come too? Bring a friend? We can make it 2 couples.
With a start, Holly realized she didn't have a friend she could call for a dinner date. She had plenty of acquaintances, but most of them were from the office. Ever since coming into the habitat, she had spent all her time, all her thoughts, on Eberly. Until this day when Gaeta had popped into her office. And now, this.
"No," she said firmly. "Thanks anyway. I have a lot of work to catch up on."
He nodded glumly.
"They've taken you away from your work, huh?"
"That's all right," Holly said. "It was a fun afternoon." She started back down the tunnel in the direction they had come from. Gaeta quickly caught up with her.
"Maybe you could have dinner with me tomorrow," he suggested.
Holly brightened. "Tomorrow? Sure. Why not?"
"Great," he said, smiling at her.
When Gaeta got back to his apartment, he stripped, showered, and decided the depilatory was still working well enough so that he didn't need to shave yet. As he pulled on his clothes, one eye on the digital clock by his bed, he commanded the phone to send a message to Wendell Sloan in Cellini. "Mr. Sloan," he said, slightly uncomfortable at being so formal, "progress report on Miss Lane. Nothing much new to report. She's still working in the Human Resources Department. Doesn't appear to have any personal attachments, no boyfriends. Not much of a social life at all. I had lunch with her this afternoon. She's really a fine young lady. Very bright, very sharp. She seems happy in her work here in the habitat. Tell her sister she's got nothing to worry about as far as she's concerned. But I'll keep on looking out for her, just like you want. Just want to let you know there's no problems here. That ought to keep the suits back in Cellini satisfied for a while. Without their backing, this whole Titan stunt would go down the tubes. Astro Corporation was the major funding source for Manuel Gaeta and his team.
Sammy Viborg sat rigidly at his desk, looking past the open door of his cubbyhole office at the larger office across the corridor. It belonged to his immediate superior, Diego Romero. Vyborg glanced at the numerals of the digital clock flashing away in the corner of his desk. "Every day it's the same routine," Vyborg grumbled to himself. "He spends the morning pretending to work, takes his lunch, then goes out for the afternoon. I sit here buried in duties and chores, and he spends every afternoon out of the office. The number two man in the department, and he only puts in half a day at best." "Don't get mad," Vyborg reminded himself. "Get even. It's time to set this lazy old incompetent against the director. With a bit of luck, I can bring them both down." Romero stepped out into the corridor and slid his office door shut. Turning, he noticed Vyborg watching him. "Buenos tardes," he said, with a smile and a slight bow. Vyborg smiled back at him, sourly. As soon as Romero was gone, Vyborg got up from his desk and walked down the corridor to the office of the communications department's director, Zeke Berkowitz. He rapped once on the half-open door, making it rattle against its track. "Come on in," Berkowitz called. As Vyborg slid the door all the way open and stepped into the office, Berkowitz smiled and said, "Ah, Sammy, what can I do for you?" Amiable was the word for Berkowitz. The man had spent a long and successful career in the video news business, first as a local reporter, then as a network anchorman, and finally as a global executive. He never made an enemy, although in the cutthroat world of news broadcasting, many people had tried to chop him down, stab him in the back, or even forcibly retire him. He survived it all with a smile and a homily about Christian charity, liberally sprinkled with self-deprecating Jewish humor. When he reached mandatory retirement age, the still youthful Berkowitz moved into academia, happily teaching a new generation of would-be journalists and public relations flacks the realities of the communications business. It was at an international conference that he met James Wilmot, the famous anthropologist. The two men became instant friends, even though they lived and taught on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean. Years later, when Wilmot invited Berkowitz to be head of the communications department on the Saturn-bound space habitat, Berkowitz, recently a widower after 50 years of loving marriage, accepted the opportunity to get as far away from his memories as he could. Now he sat back in his desk chair, handsome and suntanned, slightly chubby, a series of holograms on the wall behind him showing him at tennis tournaments and on golf courses. He smiled warmly at the dour, pinch-faced Vyborg. "What's the matter, Sammy?" Berkowitz asked jovially. "You look as if you swallowed something ugly." Taking the chair in front of Berkowitz's desk, Vyborg began. "I don't enjoy bringing this to your attention. But you're going to do it anyway. Must be important." "I think it is." "Okay, out with it." "It's Romero." "Oh, Don Diego, what's he done that bothers you?" Vyborg hesitated just long enough to show Berkowitz that what he was doing was distasteful to him. "It's very difficult for me to say this, since he's my direct superior, but, well, he's simply not pulling his own weight."
"He isn't."
"No, he isn't. He spends only half a day in the office, and then he's gone. How can he do his work?"
"That's why we've got you, Sammy."
Startled, Vyborg blurted,
"What?"
Berkowitz put on his most amiable grin and, clasping his hands prayerfully on the desktop, said, "Diego Romero is a wonderful old coot, a great teacher with a very distinguished career behind him." "Behind him," Vyborg echoed. "He's in this department, more or less, because Wilmot wanted him aboard this habitat and had to find a place for him somewhere, so he's working with us." "But he's not working," Vyborg snapped. "He's hardly ever at his desk."
"That's okay, Sammy. I haven't given him much to do. I rely on you to get the work done.
Leave Don Diego alone. He's going to be very valuable to this habitat. As a teacher."
"A teacher?" Vyborg gasped. "They got rid of him in Mexico because he was teaching unauthorized garbage. You want him teaching his blasphemies here?"
Berkowitz's smile diminished by less than a millimeter. "Freedom of thought is not blasphemous, Sammy. He's a great teacher." Vyborg muttered, "Yes, and he's teaching the rest of the office staff how to get by without working. If you find anybody goofing off in this department, you tell me about it, pronto. Don Diego's a special case. Leave him alone." Admitting defeat, Vyborg nodded and rose from his chair. "I understand. I'm sorry to have bothered you."
"No bother at all," Berkowitz said grandly. "My office door is always open to you, Sammy."
Vyborg looked around the director's office.